You're listening to
Potluck.
And what is poppin', everybody? You're listening to the Good Pop Culture Club, episode 185. My name is Marvin Yue, and join me, as always, to talk about all the good pop that gets us through our days are my co-hosts, the once and future professional Asian-American Just Ju, and the most professional culture editor, Han Win. Hey, guys.
Hey, Marvin.
Hey.
How's it going? Happy March.
It's my birthday week,
so I'm very excited.
Wait, you're a Pisces?
Happy birthday.
You knew this.
How did this not register? I feel like I know this, but I, like, you know, PTSD choose to forget.
I'm the same as your sister.
Oh, my God. You're also a God, too many fucking Pisces in my life. Y'all and your feelings.
I know.
Well, happy early birthday, Marvin.
Thank you. I am turning 40, so.
Whoa.
Oh, you have any big plans?
Do we know 40 is when I need to get my first colonoscopy, or is that 50? I should probably talk to my doctor about this.
Yeah. And also the rates of colon cancer in our generation is exponentially high, so you should probably get that checked if you can.
Yeah,
we don't eat enough beans.
Yeah. I've been eating fiber though.
Yeah, fiber, beans, fiber's pulses, great. Lentils.
Yeah, I like lentils. I need to add lentils.
Well, I'm going to, we're going to dinner. We're going to Kato, which is the fancy Taiwanese fine dining Michelin star restaurant. So I'm being very bougie.
Let me know how that is.
Hundreds of dollars for like a 25 course tasting menu.
Let me tell you. I had that when it was $80 and it was fucking delicious when it was at the strip mall. But happy for Jason Ning. I am mixing names up. Sorry, Taiwanese people. But yeah, no, it looks good. Tell me if it's worth it.
Yeah, I'll let you know. But other than that, not really planning much. I know it's a big milestone birthday, but I feel like, I don't know, as you get older, you start to maybe not look forward to all the milestones as much.
Oh, no, I would make such a big deal on my 40th birthday. Make a chance.
I believe that.
I take the opportunity to make a big deal about myself in any way.
Jess, you're the type of person who would plan your own big 40 bang.
I did. I am already starting to plan it. I did a big 30th birthday party. It was called Jess Fest. There was merch.
Oh.
There was merch.
It was great. I had a great time planning my own birthday parties.
I can't wait till Jess Fest 40. What would that be?
Yeah. It might be on Safari, so you're welcome to come. Just start saving money now.
Holy shit.
Love doing colonizer activities. No, it's the best.
No, but I also love the fact that you're allowing me to do these things that I haven't scheduled for myself. So, like, you know, your wedding was like, oh, I finally get to go to Italy. So,
any excuse to go run away and escape a little bit, I will take. And, of course, everyone is welcome to join.
Yay. Yeah. I like it.
Well, in addition to being my birthday week, it's also the week before the Oscars. So I will probably have plenty to talk about next week. I honestly forgot that it was happening this weekend.
I wish I could forget. As someone who has had to cover the Oscars way too much, and even my duties have gotten lesser, and yet it's still way too much. I think I during award season, it's like Sunday after Sunday after Sunday, and some people also cover the Saturday awards. I just don't like covering awards, you know. Let people enjoy their awards, but don't make me work it. and don't make me care, but yeah, great awards.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we're rooting for Past Lives. That's our Go Asian
Past Lives
great and, hope this year.
And Lily Gladstone. Mm-hmm. That is the one race where I would be just, because everybody else is pretty locked in at this point.
And this was, but now
I do not. That is just white supremacy at work. Because I'm sorry, there's absolutely no reason why Emma Stone, who I love and have no personal beef with, that performance does not deserve an Oscar nomination, and she already has one. If we're going to talk about like the meta narrative, the movie does not deserve.
Yeah,
Lily Gladstone fucking learned a whole new language.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with her getting nominated. You know, Emma Stone can just be nominated, but
yes,
especially when you put them side by side with people, you know, other performances. It's kind of like, really,
Yeah.
But what? Yeah, you know, my voice is gonna break when it gets there. But Yeah, I think that is actually like yet the other reason why I don't really care about awards is a lot of it is like political or, you know, just people going with the flow with something. And sometimes it's not based on merit, but whatever like the temperature is. So I learned long ago as a child to be upset by the Oscars after reading a book and being like, how did that win? Because I watched a movie that won Best Picture and I was like, that was bullshit. but anyway.
Oh, we all lived through the Crash year. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah.
Or
no.
Green Book this was, year.
This was even older than that. This was like The Greatest Show on Earth. And it was it was a movie set at a circus and there was a murder and James Stewart was a clown. And it
okay,
was
this
awful.
All sounds good, but it was bad.
It was bad. And also there were better films that week. Okay. So.
All right. Well, we're not here to talk all about the Oscars. On this episode, we are taking a look at the new Netflix live action adaptation of Avatar: The Last Airbender, a most beloved of series getting the Netflix treatment. Does it work? We'll find out. But before we get to that, let's find out what pop culture is beginning through this week. Jess, start with you. What's popping?
In the grand tradition of me not watching like very important part ones of trilogies, I watched Dune 2, Dune Your Mom. No, just kidding. But that joke never gets old to me. I watched Dune 2, part 2 yesterday. I have not watched part 1. I am aware of what happens, though. Because
it's on Netflix.
I read the Wikipedia. I do not care for origin stories. I think it's a little
I mean, to be fair,
to
it's 3 hours
wanna...
of, like, two things happening.
It was all right. I have to say, of all the ones to miss, that totally
Yeah,
fine.
Yeah, which is what my sense was. No, I totally knew who the characters were and what was happening. I'm following the discourse, you know, so, like, it was totally fine. Like, I'm not going to lie, I don't think there's a lot of... I didn't miss much by not watching the first one. I was fine.
Yeah.
I went this time because I love Zendaya and Florence Pugh. And I was like, great. This is like the new kind of up and coming class of like movie stars that really excite me. I want to watch this like big blockbuster. I heard really good things about
it. That is true. And, because if you had watched the first Dune, you would have gotten a sum total of like 1 minute of Zendaya.
Yes. And which I heard it was like a perfume commercial. Like she's just like floating around. But yeah, I had a good time, an enjoyable time. I did think it was a little overhyped from what I was sensing from, you know, the interwebs. To be fair, I don't think I am the target audience, the exact target audience for a movie like this. But, you know, I really respected the craft, the technical stuff. It was a beautiful movie. And for like a 2.5, 45-minute movie, it like wasn't that draggy. Like I didn't fall asleep. So I had a good time. But my God, like no one really prepared me for how orientally it was.
Oh, yeah.
Like I knew it was, but I'm just like, like we're supposed to be in space like 10,000 years into the future in this new society. But these are just like Bedouin Muslims on Earth, like, and so as someone who like, I guess is like a not as like into the Dune-ness or the world, and you know who's kind of like not the biggest like, not the most inherent sci-fi fan. Like, I just had a lot of questions, like, oh, like why if you know these crazy old ladies are like making shit up, why are you believing the crazy old lady? and then I'm like, ooh, wait. Riding a worm is cool, but like, oh, it's not very useful if you can't steer the worm. Can you? I guess you can steer the worm. So to be fair, they answered that question. and then some of my questions got like a little like, ooh, dicey, because, you know, I won't spoil it, but, you know, the long arc of this story and of the protagonist is like many stories about power and what do you do with power. And I found myself really just being like, you know what? I get why he made those decisions. And I'm like, oh no, am I the problem? maybe, but you know, really great action scenes. No one in 2024, I wasn't really expecting this level of like blatant orientalism. Because I have not been seeing that part of the discourse as much as some other parts.
Yeah, I know there's a lot about erasure in the discourse right now, but any fan of Dune can't be blind to the fact that, like, the first part of the series, which, like, these movies are about, is definitely just Dances with Wolves in space, right? It's about,
yes. I mean, which is fine. Like, the story structure isn't, like, that story structure of, like, Dances with Wolves or, like, White Savior, but, you know, this is kind of a riff on White Savior and what happens when a white savior comes in. Like, that's not necessarily the problem, because that is what the story is actually addressing. It is the presentation of this, like, group of people, this indigenous people, which is so blatantly ripped off of an existing people on our earth and, mm-hmm. you know, on our world. And then also portraying, and, you know, aside from, like, not even casting those people, which I don't think solves the problem, it's just like the presentation of that people, it's like, it's not even coded, like, you know, like Muslim, Bedouin, North African, Middle East. It's like, oh, you just rip that off and they're presented in maybe not the best way in the context of the story of what's gonna happen. And I'm just like, should we be doing this blatantly in this time and age, in this political context?
My biggest beef with the Dune series is that it's like the one series where someone with my surname is represented.
And he's a traitor.
And he's the traitor.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
Sorry, bro.
I know. Mm-hmm. I have a very important question to ask you, Jess.
Yes.
Did
yes.
you get the popcorn bucket?
It sold out. Freak sold that shit out first weekend. We tried. My little hubby was so sad, and I was trying to warn him. I'm like, hey, like, I think it's going to be sold out. Like, they're already moved on to the Kung Fu Panda popcorn bowl. Yeah. And so I'm going to, you know, put my head to the grindstone and find a way to get that. But the worms are fucking cool. I will give them that. And I will say that I've not related to a fictional character so deeply in a really long time. And this fictional character I'm talking about is Baron Harkonnen, the bad guy, who sits in a tub all day,
yep,
in his nude rolls, like all pasty and pale and
Skarsgård,
like, wet,
is living his best life, you know,
with like a robe. And I'm like, I love this man. I feel like that's all I want to do too, like sit in a tub and just
be a fascist,
brew it. You know, again, some of those questions I was asking myself at the end, I'm like, what would I have done? I'm like, you killed my dad. Like, I feel like I'd probably be kind of vengeful too if you did that to me and my family. And I'm just like, oh no, I'm the bad guy. No one give me messiah powers, please. But well, yeah, I would, you know, if you have 2 hours and 45 minutes to kill and you want to be perturbed by the sight of worms and space Elvis, Austin Butler has not 100% lost the Elvis voice. There are some lines in this where it really does sound like Elvis, and that cracked me up.
But, Fade and Elvis. Great.
Yes, it's a pretty good time. I would recommend if you're not, I actually wouldn't recommend if you're not like into sci-fi. Like, so it leans pretty like heavily into that. But yeah, if you don't mind it, go for it.
I'm definitely seeing it. But my question is, do I try doing the 4DX or will I get sick from the
I think the sandworm in our big ass age, I think a 4DX would give us whiplash and we would be sore the next day. Do not watch it in 4DX.
I feel like 4DX never worth it, to be honest. I would always just rather watch the film normally.
Well, it's just more for like, I don't know, shits and giggles. Like, I don't know.
I think you would hurt yourself. It looks very violent. Like the jostling.
I'm gonna read my friend's review of it because she saw it in 4DX and she loved it, but her coworker did not. So I'll read both sides and maybe think about it, because I did enjoy it for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but I don't know. A sandworm does sound like it. Riding a sandworm could be a more traumatic experience.
Yeah.
But hey, if you like Baron Harkonnen, you should check out the David Lynch version.
Okay. Is it even creepier and weirder?
He's weirder.
God. Okay.
I mean, the whole movie is super.
It's David Lynch. You know what you're getting yourself into.
That little satin robe. Yeah. I'm real into. I love Stellan Skarsgård so much. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dune too. Dune your mom.
Yeah.
Atreides nuts. What about you, Han?
Yeah. What's popping, Han?
I appreciate all the Dune puns. So I went way in the opposite direction. You went with 2 hours and 45 minutes. I think my thing is 17 minutes. I am talking about the short film Nai Nai and Waipo. It is directed by Sean Wong. He recently had his movie Didi win something at the Sundance Film Award, Film Festival. So he's kind of on a roll. go ahead. And basically, this was filmed during COVID lockdown. It's about his two grandmothers, maternal and maternal and paternal grandmothers, who actually are really good friends. They live together and even sleep in the same bed. And he visited them and started spending time with them. And that's when he realized, oh, they're a source of joy, as many old Asians are, who have great fashion sense and talk about farting all the time.
Mm-hmm. They fart a lot.
There's a lot of farting going on. They talk about farting. And, you know, it's a very sweet, partly a meditative look, partly, you know, funny. But, you know, it talks about the things you kind of can't evade, which are like aging mortality, their friends dying. But then also like, oh, we love, you know, when our grandson visits us and how they perk up and they dance and they like they let him dress them up. Mm-hmm. So there are just a lot of very cute moments. I needed something sort of like short to take my mind off of all the other stuff I was catching up on for work, which were heavier things. So yeah, it's streaming now on Disney Plus and on Hulu. So if you want a little thing for a distraction, you know, maybe watch it with your parents or some other relative. It's a very short watch. Make sure to watch the credits, which are pretty cute. There's a little bit, outtakes or something. But yeah, so it gives me a feel for maybe what his style is. I'm curious. I was not at Sundance, so I did not get to see DD, but I'm looking forward to hopefully when that gets released too.
Yeah, I was at Sundance, but I was not able to catch Didi. I actually got number like 19 on the wait list, but I had to cancel it because I was working in an event. But yeah, it won the, I think, the Audience Choice Award for U.S. Dramatic Feature, as well as the award for Best Ensemble Cast.
Nice.
And it has a pretty good cast. Joan Chen plays the mom. So Didi is about, it's basically a coming-of-age story about a 13-year-old kid who, like, tries to be something he's not to impress a girl. So like it's all about middle school cringe. So yes. the type of story we love.
Good stuff. Oh, I'm like quenching in my seat just thinking about it.
And it just got picked up by Focus Pictures. So it should be coming to theaters probably around the summer, I want to say. So
great.
I'm sure we'll be talking about this. But I think that's pretty cool that we're getting these Oscar nominated shorts on streamers. I don't know if that's something that's happened before, unless you're like watching a movie, right?
Or unless you're watching one that's specifically created by, like, let's say Netflix. but yeah, so I mean, I'm sure you can just Google like short films or streaming, and you can probably find a bunch of them because they usually do release them in theaters as a whole program. But sometimes I have to sit through stuff I don't like in order to get to the one I do like. Mm. So if it's streaming, at least I can check out a minute or two before I commit to it.
I love shorts. Back when I was like working in entertainment and like programming stuff, loved a short. So efficient.
Yeah.
Like, if it's really bad, just close your eyes for like 10 minutes, it'll be over.
You take a little nap.
That's
know?
True. Yeah. As a features programmer, like you can tell within the first 5 minutes if you're in for a good time or not.
Yeah. And, you know, animated shorts are usually my favorite, but I like the fact that this was, you know, just a nice slice of life documentary short. Because sometimes the documentary ones can be, you know, like struggle with a little bit of narrative. So, yeah, I enjoyed this one a lot. Recommend it as your Oscar nominated homework if you want to do that this weekend.
Yeah.
So, Marvin, what's popping with you?
Yeah, What's Poppin' is a book called Women of Good Fortune by Sophie Wan, who we'll be having on Books and Boba this week as an author chat. It is a book about three women living in Shanghai, dealing with the patriarchy, and more specifically, modern Chinese patriarchy. So you have Rina, who is a professional woman who, despite being the best worker, keeps getting passed up for promotions. Because her superiors, even though she's a good worker, they don't want to promote someone who they think will end up just leaving soon to get married and have kids.
Oh, oof. Brother. Oof. That's such bullshit. I've heard that before.
Yeah. You have Jane, who is a woman who had a career but left it to pursue her dream of being a rich housewife. But because of her quote-unquote plain looks, settles for an unhappy but stable marriage and dreams of getting out. And then you have their friend Lulu, who is living her family's dream of marrying rich, but is unsure because she's lived her entire life as a dutiful daughter, supporting her family at the expense of her own wishes. So all three women want to break out of their current situations and seize an opportunity. Because Lulu is marrying the most eligible bachelor of the richest family in China, there will be an obscene amount of red envelope money at the wedding, and they decide to do a heist. So yeah, this is a heist story about stealing wedding money.
Oh, fun. Ooh.
Yeah, it's a really fun book that explores a lot of themes such as, you know, the value of, you know, leftover women in Chinese society, the patriarchy, the expectations of parents who treat their children as assets.
Do I need to read it, Marvin, if I live it? Will I throw this book out a window as I have some other books?
I mean, it does hit a little close to home.
There's a heist.
That's true, too.
You don't know my life. Maybe that is my life.
I like heists even, you know. But.
Yeah. And what I really love about this book is it takes the heist very seriously. Like, it is first and foremost a really good heist story. Like, the first two-thirds of the book is just them preparing for the heist. And the whole last third is the heist itself. And it goes nitty-gritty of the heist. And something I know you'll appreciate, Jess, is they do a really good getting the gang together sequence because they bring in two outsiders to help with the heist. In addition to our three friends, we have Michelangelo, who is Jane's fake luxury goods person who joins as the forger. And then you have May, who is Rina's Gen Z cousin who joins as the driver. And so you have like these different perspectives of women who are also living in like the fringes of modern Chinese culture to add to the perspectives. And it's a lot of fun. I think you'll like it, Jess. I think as like a Shanghai girl yourself, there's a lot of like inside jokes.
I'll check it out. It does look fun. And I have I wish I had known this earlier when I was like traveling, because I would have loved to read this while on a plane.
Yeah, definitely a good plane book. It's a pretty breezy read. And again, I really love that it takes the heist very seriously, which, you know, sometimes I've read a couple of heist books that don't spend too much time on the heist itself. So I appreciate that Sophie spends time to develop the heist in this one.
Okay. I'll check it out. I hope that this sounds like they need to do a film or TV adaptation at some point. Yes. I hope that happens.
Definitely. Well,
as soon as you said someone who's supposedly not good looking, I was like, oh, they're going to cast someone good looking, but just put glasses on her. but yeah, I already put a hold at my library for this. So.
Yeah. So the book is Women of Good Fortune by Sophie Wan. It's out. It came out earlier this week, so it should be out at booksellers everywhere. Check it out. I really dug it. But with that, that'll do it for What's Poppin' for this week. When we come back, we are diving into the new Netflix live-action adaptation of Avatar, The Last Airbender. Stick around.
Hi, I'm Charlene Kay. I'm a musician, songwriter, and guitarist. Growing up, I loved music. Whether it was pop, acoustic, emo, I ate it all up. But as a Chinese-American kid living in Scottsdale, Arizona, I also felt isolated, never really seeing artists who looked like me or shared my experiences. So after years of performing on stages all over the world, I wanted to create a space to highlight the amazing Asian musicians who I knew were out there, just not always getting played on the radio. That's why I started Golden Hour, a podcast where Asian singers, songwriters, instrumentalists, and music producers share their personal stories. And it's a space for you to discover your new favorite artist. Listen to Golden Hour with me, Charlene Kay, wherever you get your podcasts. Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.
Hi, I'm Marvin.
And I'm Rira.
And we're the hosts of Books and Boba, a book club and podcast dedicated to books by Asian and Asian American authors.
Each month, we pick a book by an Asian author to read and discuss on the show.
We read a variety of genres, including contemporary and historical fiction, sci-fi and fantasy, romance and cozy mysteries, and so much more.
Our past book club picks have included Pachinko by Minjin Lee, Patron Saints of Nothing by Randy Ribeye, Grace of Kings by Ken Liu, and The Kiss Quotient by Helen Huang.
Every month, we also go through the latest news in Asian American literature, as well as chat with some awesome Asian authors about their works.
So whether you want to start reading for fun again or diversify your TBR list, we got your Asian literature cravings covered. For more info, check out our website at booksandboba.com, and you can listen to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and wherever you find your podcasts.
Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective. And welcome back to the Good Pop Culture Club. On this episode, we are discussing Avatar, The Last Airbender, specifically the new Netflix live action version that just dropped a week ago. Avatar, The Last Airbender, of course, is a beloved series taking place in a fantasy world divided into four nations based on the four classic elements: water, fire, earth, and air. And in each nation, there are people known as benders who can conjure the element of their nation to fight and do various things. The story follows the journey of Aang, who is the titular last airbender, as the last member of the air nomad tribe that survived a genocide by the Fire Kingdom, and also the Avatar, who is the one person who can control all four elements. The story follows his journey along with his friends as he seeks to bring balance back to the world after being trapped in ice for 100 years, which allowed him to escape the genocide of the Fire Kingdom, but also left the world to be subjugated by the Fire Nation's imperial machine. The live-action series stars an ensemble cast, including newcomers Gordon Cormier, Kia Wintiel, and Ian Ousley as our main characters, Aang, Katara, and Sokka, as well as a pretty impressive cast of Asian-American veteran actors, Ken Leong, Daniel Dae Kim, Paul Sung-Hyung Lee, and Dallas Liu, who I guess is technically still a newcomer, even though we saw him previously on as the older brother on Pen 15. It is a very beloved animated series that was a seminal work for a lot of my friends. I myself have not had the pleasure of enjoying Avatar The Last Airbender until now. And I gotta say, as an introduction into this world, I kind of dug it. A lot more worked for me than didn't. But I'm curious to hear your initial thoughts. What do we all think of Netflix's Avatar The Last Airbender?
As a person who has also not watched Avatar before, with the exception of I did watch the first episode of the original animated series just to see if I wanted to watch it at some point, and I decided I didn't. So I went into this almost knowing nothing. You know, I think I knew that Appa was the flying bison thing. But it's all right. As far as I think it's well put together, I think the actors are doing their best. It looks good. I like fantasy. I just found I wasn't really involved with the action. Like, I followed the whole Chosen One storyline. I just didn't care. So it wasn't bad to watch, though. While I was sitting in front of it, you know, it was enjoyable. I just didn't see myself excited to go to the next episode. And I don't know if maybe I am missing that nostalgia factor or whatever. Or maybe I think, you know, there's a lot going on with me these days. So maybe I was a little distracted. So I'm not mad at the show, but also I wasn't really, you know, taken in by it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I mentioned, I also have no experience watching the series. I just know general things about it through cultural osmosis, right? I know there is a hero's journey. I know there is a pretty satisfying anti-hero's journey. I found myself really digging it. I think the strengths of the overarching story of Avatar: The Last Airbender, as someone who like is trying to save the world, but like also afraid of saving the world, I think those still hit. And those are classic story beats for a reason. And I did find myself enjoying it. It definitely gets stronger as it goes along. I think as someone who has not watched the original series, there are less, like, I didn't get caught up in comparing the two versions. So as its own thing, I think it's pretty solid. I did and we can talk about this more later, but I did definitely notice the discrepancy of, like, some of these more veteran actors are definitely putting a lot of work and acting circles around the younger actors. But that really just made me appreciate their skill more. You know, the script itself is still stuck in the confines of a kid's show. And I think that's kind of an interesting thing to notice, too, is the producers definitely try to, in their own words, Game of Thrones it up, but it still has the heart of a kid's show. And that dissonance definitely was a little off sometimes. But just as someone who did watch the original series, what were your thoughts about this adaptation?
Yes, I watched the original. I'm not as like obsessed or fanatic. It has a very, very strong fandom. Both, you know, folks who watched it, like, around, you know, my age, who watched it in the original run, and folks who maybe watched it later. So I understand it has, like, a very strong fandom, which, you know, tends to always bring out, like, some ugliness in the world and on the internet. So I have, again, I've seen the original, and this is just always going to be a bigger conversation about adaptation and why we adapt. And I understand why Netflix is adapting, because they want to make money, and this is a huge IP, and they are probably going to reach a level of an audience they're not going to reach, because there's just going to be some folks who are not going to watch animated series or what's something that's perceived as a children's animated series, right?
Yeah, and something that's old.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I think the animated series is the fact that the animated series, you know, in our day and age, it's still accessible, right? You can still watch it online or find DVDs or rent it. It's still very good. It's held up very well in terms of the storylines. Like, nothing's been, like, nothing in the story material, like, the content itself, I think, isn't necessarily, like, has aged poorly or is, like, super problematic. And to be fair, it's only been, like, 10 years. Like, yeah. So that's, I think that's, you know, what it's fighting against. Like, there's always going to be some comparison. Comparison's a thief of joy, allegedly. So it's like, can we judge this show on its own merit away from the animated series? I know some people can't, and they absolutely hate it, and I think they need to go touch some fucking grass. Because I've seen some shit where they're like, the movie was better. Like, no, the movie was not fucking better, okay?
That's just blasphemy.
Blasphemy. So, like, for me, like, I think with that context of, like, did we need this adaptation when there is a perfectly good version of this show that still exists and is accessible? No. Can I look at it as its own show and formulate my own thoughts that just isn't just, oh, the show, the animated show did it better? Yes, I can. And generally, I think that it is, I think it suffers, but this is where my understanding of, like, the deeper parts of the layers of the animated story come in and where they're drawing from. I do think that there's just going to be some issues when you are, number one, logistically working with child actors, which I went to an event and they pointed that out. Like, they're like, yeah, we really wanted to cast kids to play the kids. And I was like, oh, shit, I totally forgot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, Gordon Cormier is, like, 12.
Yep.
Like, you can't, I think, what, they can work, like, 6 hours max a day?
Yeah.
Dallas Liu is, I believe, over 18. But I think the rest of the cast is, like, pretty young. So I'm like, okay, you're trying to do a lot of heavy lifting, a lot of scenes, a lot of fight scenes, like CGI stuff, like action scenes. I can imagine it's really hard. And I do think we see some of the consequences of that in the show itself. And I think we see some, like, effects of what happens when you have to condense, like, a lot of things into 8 episodes. But overall, I thought it was pretty fun. I think it's not going to win, like, a bunch of awards or, like, deep thought pieces. But I'm like, I think it's a perfectly fine. It's not the worst adaptation I've seen from Netflix.
Yeah, it's not Cowboy Bebop.
It may not be the best, but again, like, yeah, Cowboy Bebop was pretty bad. Let's be real. But I think that the show, even though it may not be, like, the absolute best thing I hoped it would be, it's still not, it's not fighting an uphill battle, and it's not that bad. It was perfectly enjoyable. And I think at the end of the day, I don't know why they would frame it as Game of Thrones. I think that's stupid on the producer or, like,
yeah.
like that he took it that I'm going, this is not Game of Thrones. This is like a very different vibe. And I think even though we get some pretty intense scenes in the very first episode, and I do think that is the biggest, I guess, argument for getting a live action adaptation. Because for me, emotionally, it did hit different seeing like actual kids seeing the effects of a genocide, like trying to escape a genocide, of like getting attacked. And maybe this is also because I'm really fucking old now. Like, I'm on the other side of 30. But, like, now when I see, like, these, like, coming-of-age stories where these kids have to go on these parallel journeys, I get really emotional because I'm just like, you guys are kids. Like, you shouldn't be doing this. Like, you know, it hits really hard when you're, like, when Sokka is, like, 16 and he, like, turns to, like, the 15-year-old and is like, you're in charge now. You and the 12-year-olds guard the rest because the rest of our people have just been decimated. You know, it hits different when you see, like, Gordon Cormer see, like, the dead body skeleton remains of his, like, beloved friend and mentor. I'm like, holy shit, this is really intense. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
These are kids.
The live action aspect of it definitely adds more to, like, the world being. And I understand that the world in the original series was also, like, not a post-apocalypse, but, like, a world under empire, right? A world under oppression. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Seeing that, like, they live in this world, but also the fact that, like, the journey of the kids is still very much a kid's adventure. I think that was, like, it was an interesting, like, vibe they were going for, right?
Yeah.
I think a cartoon just doesn't, like, you know, you can mentally or, like, was it academically understand, like, oh, this character is, like, 12, this character is 13, but then you just kind of, like, okay, whatever, they're all cartoons at the end of the day. It's a little harder to, like, skip by that so blatantly when again it's live action actors.
I will say that regardless of any of our opinions, this is the number one show on every Netflix all around the world, I believe, and it's been renewed for two seasons, two and three. So the fact that they, you know, Netflix is a canceling happy streaming service goes to show you that how popular this is. And that's why they put their money behind it, two more seasons.
Avatar The Last Airbender has the same type of cultural cachet as that one Wizard School series, right? Like,
yeah, but you never know if people are going to respond because, like, you know, they really thought Cowboy Bebop was going to do really well. And so they had to wait to see how well it did before they decided. And so, yes, while we kind of assumed that this was going to do well, You don't know. I mean, we thought other
things
would
do well.
Yeah, and as a fantasy show, it actually looks not bad. I mean, there are some parts that still look pretty janky, but as a whole, like, the bending looks pretty solid. The special effects, for the most part, look pretty good. I know they shot most of this in, like, their own version of the volume, which is the Disney, you know, like, digital soundstage. And I think there are definitely some times when it was noticeable, but for the most part, like, it's a pretty decent looking show. I think for some of the action scenes, especially the chase scenes, you definitely see the limitations of shooting in the volume. But for a lot of, like, just the scenes of them just looking around, walking around, like, it looks solid.
Yeah, I think production wise, I had no quibbles. I think the acting is pretty decent. I think the thing I liked the least was the writing.
Yeah, I think this is an issue you run into whenever you have, like, a fantasy series where you have to explain world building and a complex magical system, and you don't have confidence to show not tell. This show definitely.
Yeah. Well, no, that's what I'm talking about in terms of condensation. Like, you are taking 20 episodes per season, where there's a lot more room to show you, like, you know, like, Avatar history and, like, who these people are. Because you don't get this, like, dump right away in the series, right? Like, the animated series. But here they're, like, you can tell they're, like, okay, we got to, like, introduce all the past Avatars. We got to, like, explain why it's important. We got to explain how it works. And I'm just like, oh, this is a lot. They're just exposing to me.
Yeah, you know what? Like, even to a certain extent, I don't even mind the exposition because there's a certain amount of, like, that happening in fantasy. But honestly, it's just the dialogue between people that's supposed to like show either camaraderie or humor or something that, or even like heroism, that I feel a lot of it falls flat. And so I couldn't, maybe that was part of my reason for not really grasping onto any of these characters.
No, I definitely see that, especially with the younger actors, the kids, like there's definitely a lot of like, this feels like a Saturday morning kids show type of energy, which is why I really appreciate the veteran actors in this show and how much they're bringing, right? Like my favorite character in the entire series is actually Ken Leong's General Zhao, which I forgot that Ken was in this show. So when I saw him, I was like, man, that guy's way too good an actor to be here. But he really like brought 110% to this role. Like one of my favorite Ken Leong roles is Eric Tao from HBO's Industry, where he plays like this intimidating, aggressive investment banker who deep down will do whatever it takes to survive. And he brings that energy in playing this general who sees this opportunity to like advance his station and takes it, but can't really help being a dick about it too.
Yeah, I can see that. Just, you know, with a top knot here or what, and battle armor. Well, along those lines, the character I appreciate the most is actually one of the younger actors, though he's not a child really anymore. Dallas Liu as Zuko. I think, you know, it's never easy to play. I mean, it's never easy to play someone who hopefully will get a redemption arc, because you have to sell being the snotty, you know, or seemingly snotty, selfish person, and really like get into that, but then also be able to show enough nuance later on. And, you know, I think that he does that well enough within the space of the few episodes I've seen. And I know his eventual arc, of course. So, yeah, I really appreciate it. Also, you know what? Go with the hair.
He committed. He shaved his head.
Yeah.
And Dallas looks is good. Also comes from a martial arts background. And so I think that also.
You can see that.
You can see that. He's a great mover. He's a great actor.
I mean, he really had a lot on his shoulders, right? Like he's playing literally probably the fan favorite character of the entire series.
Yeah. And, you know, he had to yell at it a little kid. So
he really does sound like Dante Bosco in a lot. Like his affectation really sounds like Zuko, like Dante Bosco Zuko. So I'm just like, damn, like Dallas,
good job.
Great casting. I think overall the casting was pretty good. I give a lot of grace to the kids because, again, unlike the original show, and this is where my beef comes in.
Yes.
I don't care how good the original fucking animated show was. Those white people appropriated a bunch of Asian cultures, mixed them up, which I will give a lot of grace in, because in the fantasy thing, I was like, fine, whatever, you do it with like the white fantasy, okay, like I'll give you a grace because other characters are pretty like well written and like balanced. But like, you didn't cast a single fucking Asian or indigenous actor to voice in your original series, and then when you could have rectified it in your second fucking series, you didn't do that either.
Yeah,
all white people, all white actors.
Yeah, Legend of Korra,
both series,
definitely.
Yeah. That's true. I didn't realize the original Katara was Mae Whitman.
Yeah,
from Arrested Development,
and it wasn't the early '80s when there were maybe less voice actors who were Asian. There were plenty in the 2000s. Yeah,
and then okay, fine, like. First one, maybe you didn't think it'd be a hit. Maybe whatever. 2005, whatever. Okay. Legend of Korra came out in a in a teens year. Okay. 20 teens. Okay.
Yes.
You should have fucking fixed that by then. And not one. So I'm just like, yeah, a white woman voices Korra, an indigenous brown skinned character. Okay. So
yeah,
I don't care. The fact that this at least a live action show casts folks pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I really respect that, even if it means maybe getting some unexperienced actors.
Mm-hmm.
I will say shot. One of the, I guess, hardest things to look past is the fact, and this goes back to, like you mentioned, the origins of the original series, which is a Asian-inspired fantasy made by white dudes, which is having actual Asian and indigenous people living in this Asian-inspired fantasy world made by white dudes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just like, that's why I don't care how good I can, again, I can hold two truths at once. very well written series, you mm-hmm. know, create really great world building. Fucking racist casting practices and yeah. and hiring practices. So I'm and so they're never gonna get a full pass in my book.
Yeah, like seeing people named, you know, Roku, Kiyoshi, mm-hmm. like the types of names that like white people name their like RPG characters in like tabletop role playing yeah. games set in Asia, right? Like I think that's the
part. There's a Mai, of course. There's always a Mai. mm-hmm. Ty Lee, right? It's jarring because some of them are more fantastical mm-hmm. and then some of them are like real names. So you're right. just kind of like, why didn't you just go further one or the other?
One or
right?
the
like,
other, right.
Like if they're like, they all have like more fantastical names, which probably makes more sense in this world, right? Like you take it a few steps beyond like real names, but then like, then you have someone like General, you know, Zhao. And yes. you're just like, that's a real guy. You know, like, that's yes. a real yes. name.
Right, right. Also, like, I know this was a something that was, you know, a bone of contention when it came to the live action. But if you are going to spell a character's name A-A-N-G, I would pronounce it Ang, but it's Aang. So it's, again, no logic. Doesn't make sense. Why are you, like, anyway. So that also... This we're here just talking about names here, but that's also where I kind of was worried that the mix and matching of the cultural elements would also be at play in the show. And they hold back and think enough that you kind of can tell, like, oh, this is Japanese-esque or Tibetan-esque and stuff like that. But it doesn't go too deep, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I appreciate is like, as someone who's read a lot of Asian-inspired fantasy over mm-hmm. the years, one of the tropes is, like, you have fantasy countries and kingdoms mapped onto real-life fantasy and kingdoms. So, oh, this is just Korea. Oh, this is just Japan. And I do appreciate that, like, the nations in Avatar, while having certain motifs, definitely, like, their themes are more based on, like, the elements, right? Like mm-hmm. the Fire Nation are a bunch of fascists that, you know, destroy yeah. the air nomads. I mean, they're monks. They're definitely based on like Tibetan monks. I do kind of appreciate that there wasn't like a, oh, this is just Imperial Japan, but like more like, oh, this is
let's
like,
be real, it is just Imperial Japan. Yes. Let's be real, the Fire Nation's just Imperial Japan. And it's okay. Like, again, it's a very well-known, you know, it's a thing you do in fantasy. You base off real things. Just, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien really, like, fucked it up and made the default, like, white England mm-hmm, sure. for many centuries. So it's just, you know, in yeah. the context of what we're talking about in American media, it's just, like, sucks that. You know, like this, if this is the best representation we get, like this is the biggest cultural touch point that has like entered mainstream. And it is this like kind of weird pan-Asian amalgamation that isn't even from someone from the community. It's just yeah. it's just a little like, meh. But that's yeah. a bigger, yeah, that's a bigger conversation. And yeah. but the show itself, again, I think it's like,
it's fine.
It's trying to work. It's trying to work with the source material into that context. And I think, again, I also think people need to understand, like, TV show's a different game than movies, right? Like, it's not gonna look like Dune. It's not even gonna look like, it's not even gonna look like Game of Thrones, right? Like, you're like, the wigs are kind of bad. Like, we admit that the wigs are kind of bad. They're TV wigs, you know. You don't got the budget to get the silk front, the human hair silk front lace. You don't have the time to install that on everybody. Like, you're, it's I think people have to recalibrate to the reality of production a little bit.
Yeah, but what the show does have going for it is at least it does have like Asian people both in front of and behind mm-hmm. the camera, which I just watched episodes 5 and 6, which are Roseanne Yang's episodes, and she's the director of Creamery, which is another one of our favorite yeah. Shows. And I definitely like, I love that her episodes were kind of the more thematically different, right? Like episode 5 is like kind of a horror episode. which is interesting. And I mean, I did hear that the original creators stepped out of this project.
Oh, they could suck a bag of dicks. They were fighting about money because I don't think they understood. They're animated people. I don't think they understand the my gut is telling me they didn't understand the what you have to do to make a live action 8-episode live action thing this much money per budget. Like they were probably like, well, we can't cut those. Just like that's you have to make choices. Like that's just the reality of like getting it done to have a show at all. And then getting it done under a certain amount of money, or else they're gonna like can your ass. So, again, sorry, Brian and Michael will never be invited to my dim sum table fully.
I think that's a safe bet.
Yeah.
Oh, and then, sorry, and then they have the audacity to go to the press and like try to shit talk the live action, and I'm like, a lot of shit goes down. You can be butthurt, but now you are. Because look at the cat. At the end of the day, look at how many people who look like us got some fucking employment, got some credit.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at like the meta narrative as like a piece of reclaimed Asian inspired fantasy, I think the show is a success, right? At least in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Suck it.
Yeah. Despite my sort of quibbles, I overall are just those are considerations to take when discussing the show, but I think overall it did what it's supposed to do. And the addition of Asian faces in front and behind the cameras really does, I think, help maybe make it feel less orientalist and othering. So, yeah.
I will say one of my biggest issues while watching is just Sokka, and not Sokka as in his character. I know he's supposed to be the butt monkey, the person who's like, you know, the butt of every joke. But like just, and I know there's like a potential controversy with the casting and everything, but like the guy is very white passing. And when compared to the rest of his on-screen family who are at the very least indigenous looking, like it was definitely like it took me out every time I saw him on screen.
Yeah, some of the lighting, maybe they were trying to like go for like very like intense, like, you know, they're in the Arctic, the sun is very intense and it's very white, like overall, so reflection. But like some of the skin tone, I'm just like, she's not that pale in real life. I've seen her on red carpets and stuff. I'm like, I kind of miss some of that. And, you know, casting fiasco with him. I mean, who knows what the fuck happened? I can't imagine that's like easy conversation or a legal conversation to have after a certain point. So
yeah, it's definitely noticeable, which I don't think like whoever was in charge of casting should have seen it coming. But
yeah, it's kind of a tough thing, especially when we're talking about any sort of indigenous heritage, because the way the groups define is not necessarily how, you know, we would think. And so I'm definitely not the authority. But looks wise, compared to the character, it is a tougher sell. If I wanted some white looking Asians, then I'd be watching K-dramas, right? So, and I know he's also indigenous.
Even with this discourse, this show is still fucking better job than anything those other bitches did. Fight
yes.
Me.
And most especially the live action movie. So,
oh my God, let's not even talk about it. Truly, the people who are like the live action movie is better are huffing paint. Like you need to just get your head out of your own ass and go like talk to a human person.
Mm-hmm. Although, would have loved to see Dev Patel as this Zuko.
I think he is going to stay as far away from this as humanly possible.
You know what? Dev Patel's pretty busy right now. He's ramping up
monkey
to get
manning.
Yeah, we're trying to get him so badly at Slan, but yeah, like he's left this behind. It's in his rear view.
And good for him.
All right, so as we wind down our conversation, gotta ask, is Netflix's Avatar The Last Airbender good pop? Will you keep watching?
I say yes. Despite all of my grumpiness, I do think it's well done. It didn't resonate as strongly with me, but I'm happy that it's doing well. I'm happy it got 2 more seasons and that lots more Asian actors can get more work. So yeah, good for them. Good for them.
I agree. I actually think this is a pretty solid adaptation. And again, everyone needs to go get a check, get paid. And I'm excited to see there's even more kind of characters coming out, and I'm excited to see what they're gonna do with some of those like fun characters that are happening in the latter half of the story.
Yeah. I also thought it was good pop. I am actually pretty excited to go and watch the last two episodes of the season, which is not something I expected out of this adaptation. And I think this has spurred me to go and explore the original series, which is something that I didn't think I would be doing. So I think as like my introduction to the world of Avatar, it's pretty successful. There are some parts where I wish it was better, but I think it is good pop. So excited to explore more into the Avatar world. I know those two dudes are planning other things as well. So interesting to see if what lessons they took from this whole experience. But yeah, Avatar The Last Airbender. Pretty good. all right. So that'll do it for our discussion of Avatar The Last Airbender, streaming now on Netflix. Before we call it an episode, Jess Han, if people want to find out more of your thoughts, where can they go?
My trash takes are on Twitter at JessJuTweets.
And I am still on Twitter, Instagram, and everywhere else at Hanonymous.
You can follow me on Instagram at Marvin Yue. You can check out our show at goodpop.club. We are a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective. Check out our fellow Asian American hosted podcasts by going to the website podcastpotluck.com. And yeah, that'll do it for this episode of Good Pop. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, I'm Bill Yu, and you may know me from a blog called Angry Asian Man.
And I'm Jeff Yang, author, journalist, and celebrity dad.
We host a podcast called They Call Us Bruce, an unfiltered conversation about what's happening in Asian America.
Each week or so, we host a discussion about some of the most vital and interesting topics in our pop culture and our community, bringing in guests who are shaping and informing this thing called Asian America from Hollywood to D.C. and beyond.
We got media, entertainment, food, family, politics, representation.
The good, the bad, the WTF of it all.
So check us out wherever you get your podcasts or at theycallsbruce.com.
Peace.
Peace.